The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello and welcome to Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast. It's Monday and we're coming off the back of a massive weekend of Premier League football. Man City 3 points clear at the top of the table after their emphatic win over Newcastle United, whilst Liverpool, they were held to Spurs. Whilst at the other end of the table, Burnley, Everton and Leeds now all level pegging in the race to avoid the drop, and all with just 3 games left of this season. A full recap of the weekend's games. If you want that, check in with Fergal and the crew on last night's Sunday Review podcast. You can find that now on the Football Social Daily podcast feeds. But on today's show, we've got two gents whose teams conceded a collective 9 goals this weekend.
Oh, here we go.
Newcastle United.
When he throws a pair, starts giving it out early doors.
That's Marley Anderson, Newcastle United fan, and we've got Joel Tudor as well, Manchester United supporter who watched his team concede 4 to Brighton at the weekend. That must have been painful.
Slightly. To be fair, that introduction was quite nice because me and Marley have been getting like Alistair Bruce type intros, voices smooth type intros, so we'll take that one.
Slightly better. Well, on today's podcast, we're going to be talking title races, but not the title race that's currently taking place. We're going to be looking at some of the biggest ever slip-ups in the race for the title in a little bit. We're also 1 month away from the opening of the transfer window, so we're going to take a little look at some of the big money deals that could be happening this summer. But we're going to start, as we often do on a Monday, with a little bit of a moan, with Get In The Sea. One thing that has really wound you up from the weekend's football and you just want to vent a little bit of spleen about it. I'm going to go first on this one because I'm going to moan about once more, and you could probably take several of my moans I've already had this season on this one. I'm going to moan about Jurgen Klopp whinging about the way other teams play football after Liverpool's 1-1 draw with Spurs. Here is Jurgen having a little bit of a whinge.
I'm sorry, I'm the wrong person for that. I don't like this way, kind of football, but that's my personal problem. I think they're world class and I think they should be do more for the game. Having a game against Liverpool and having 36-30% possession, but it's my problem. I cannot coach it, so that's why I cannot do it. So yes, world class players block all the balls. Pretty difficult. Atletico Madrid is doing it. So, fine, they've won whatever in the past. Fine, absolutely fine. It's just I can't. So, but yes, I respect everything what they do, but it's not me.
He's just got to be the worst loser in Premier League history, I think. Stop throwing your toys at the pram every single time your side don't win. What I hate about this is he's criticising the way another team plays. And it's not the first time he's done this either. Not every other team is blessed with the squad that Liverpool have, the talent they have, or the money that it takes to build that squad that Liverpool have. So you can't hold them to the same standards. I think Jurgen Klopp's job as a football manager is to work out how to win a game of football against the opposition, no matter what the opposition do. Just like the opposition manager, their job is to work out how to beat Liverpool no matter what they do. So concentrate on your job and focus on winning the game and getting the best out of your players rather than criticising the other team for not playing the beautiful football or the type of football that you think they should play. Can you imagine Sam Allardyce coming out in a post-match press conference and whinging that the opposition were too fluid? It was too pretty. There were too many passes. Why couldn't they just lob it forward?
It's not my style.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing that Jurgen Klopp is doing.
Wasn't it Sam Allardyce when he was at Bolton years and years ago, probably going back 10, 12 years now, and he said somebody had criticised how Bolton play. I think it was Mourinho, because him and Mourinho hated each other, didn't they?
That was when he was at West Ham. When he was talking about the knocking, like Mourinho was talking about knocking down the wall with a jackhammer.
Something like that, yeah. And
such a Mourinho quote.
And Allardyce said something like, oh, he hates it, doesn't he? He hates it when we come and beat them. And oh, he hates it when all the little guys come and beat them and the £100 million contracts and what have you. But it's the same, isn't it? It's the same situation, just 15 years on or whatever it may be, or 10 years, whatever it was. So they're all bad losers, aren't they? But I mean, you do want that humility to just go, you know what, we weren't good enough today.
They found a way to to keep us to a 1-1. That's like acknowledge the success of the other team. And it's not like Spurs do it every week either. It's not like they're constantly putting 11 men behind the ball.
It's not like it was 0-0 as well. They scored.
Yeah.
Like they went and scored. They went and scored first.
And they could have won it as well.
Yeah, they had plenty of chances to win it. You know, Liverpool weren't at the best, and that happens. And that's why, you know, that's what a title race is. You've got 38 different challenges every week. And if everybody rolled, put it this way, if you, Liverpool were playing Spurs and Spurs played a certain way, and I think Klopp wanted Spurs to play like Newcastle did against Man City, just far too open, got picked off five times. That's what happens. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're Spurs and you've got Harry Kane and what have you, because you're still going to get picked off, because defensively they're quite weak, hence why they play five at the back, and hence why they play like they did against Liverpool. So you can't really criticise it. And, you know, he had a dig at how much they'd spent and how they're meant to be world-class and what have you. And just, it summed up for me the reason why people don't want Liverpool to win the league. It's because they're bad losers, I think. And
well, they're not bad losers, to be fair. It's purely Jurgen Klopp, isn't it? He has to find something to blame or someone to blame that isn't him, his players or his tactics. And it's week in, week out. It might be the weather one week. It might be the way the opposition play the next. But it's just bad sportsmanship. As long as the other team's playing 11 players and not 25, as long as they're not going about breaking the legs of the opposition, I think you just get on with it and you go, well, it's my job as a football manager to work out how to solve the problem that's been put in front of me.
Yeah. And it comes down to tactics. As like, for example, we all watched Atletico against Man City and we were all fuming the next day about how Atletico played. But the reason for that was more because Atletico were hell-bent on trying to get players sent off and start fights and disrupt and time waste. I don't think Spurs did that as much. They
just nullified what Liverpool was just a deep thing, didn't they? Like, imagine if, like, for example, I think Klopp mentioned something about the possession, that, you know, they dominate possession and they let them have the ball. I don't think I've seen a side at Anfield who've dominated possession once. So it's not like this is some anomaly where a team's completely changed the game up for them. It's strange. Because I bet if, let's say, Spurs rolled over against Manchester City and played in that same way, Klopp wouldn't have been saying, wow, I don't like the way that Spurs played against City. It's not my style of football. It's just the fact that they're so pressured and they're so intense with this. Because he knows that City have barely dropped any points. One point dropped is basically the title done now.
Yeah.
So he's so pressured that he knows that it's pretty much game over if they drop points. And yeah, I just don't know what he expected. Was he expecting Spurs to literally allow them to play to their strengths and pick them off one after the other? Because Conte's got a stressful job as well of trying to keep on to Arsenal. And that point might actually be worth something in the end when they actually play the North London Derby soon. So,
he couldn't let it go to 4 points, could he? Because then it's pointless. The North London Derby on Thursday, I think it is. Thursday. So, you know. But yeah, your possession thing there, I've just Googled the Liverpool City 2-2 back in October at Anfield. And the possession there was 48-52 in favour of City.
That's the only team that can do that.
Exactly. So City, we all know how good City are. And Liverpool, to be fair to them, went at it hammer and tongue. Like, none of them backed down. And that's why we're seeing 52 versus 48 possession. You know, 28 passes difference in the two sides over 90 minutes. So, you know, not every team's going to do that. If you've got to be as good as Man City to beat Liverpool's possession by 2%, 28 passes, if you have to be that good, you can't look at everyone else and go, why don't you play like that?
I'd be fascinated
because we've got Jamal Lascelles at the back, so we're going to lose.
I'd be fascinated to know if Klopp was like this in his days at Dortmund, because obviously we wouldn't have seen as many press conferences as him when he was, and obviously it wasn't quite the same pressure or levels that he is at Liverpool, but I'd be really interested to know whether he had the same kind of attitude when he went about losing games there. But anyway, that is my get in the sea for today. Jurgen Klopp, get out the sea, because I've put you in there previously, and then get back in the sea. Not enjoying your whinging. Right, Marley, what are you going for?
What am I going for? I am going for... It's similar to yours in terms of it's whinging. And it is Leeds at the weekend. And it's, in particular, it's Rafinha, who wound me up no end on Sunday when I was watching Match of the Day. Obviously, they went 2-0 down to Arsenal early doors and the game was pretty much over. And then Ayling went in with that ridiculous tackle on Martinelli in the corner, two-footed, and got sent off. But the thing that wound me up was Rafinha just not leaving the referee alone. Like, he followed him to VAR and was saying something, God knows what, because this is my point of it. What are you possibly moaning about? You've seen the guy go in with 2 feet in the corner. Martinelli was stood still, for God's sake. Like, he's gone in with 2 feet. Even Stevie Wonder could have seen that was a red card. It was ridiculous. It didn't even need looking again. I'm amazed the whole situation didn't get a red card straight away, even that he had to go to VAR, because it was ridiculous. But, I mean, Rafinha didn't leave him alone and then followed him to VAR, watched him do it. And as soon as he came back with VAR and he put his yellow card in his pocket, Rafinha was still at him. So he booked him. And then he still couldn't be pushed away. Like, his teammates were trying to get him away and he was still having a go at him. And I just think he was incredibly lucky not to get a red card, because I'd have sent him off before I'd even got back from the VAR thing, because he was doing my head in, because I was like, there's no point in this. Like, you can appeal decisions and stuff and say your piece, that's fine, but you're never going to get a referee to overturn it, especially when he went and looked at it on the bloody TV. It's ridiculous.
It's because he knew he was going to have to play right back. It's like, yeah. He just wanted to do anything to avoid the fact playing right back.
Yeah, he's my partner. I don't want to. I know how good Martinelli is from Brazil. So I don't fancy that. So yeah, it was annoying. And I don't like it when it's one of the modern day things. I don't like when they just will not leave referees alone.
It's not new though, is it? I mean, I remember back in the day, Roy Keane getting so far into referees' faces he could taste their tonsils. It was like, it was nose-to-nose stuff, you bellowing in their face. And until there's some kind of rule introduced, there's like yellow cards for approaching a referee, or a rugby approach where only the captain can go up to them or something like that, it's not going to change. It's just part of, sadly, it is part of the game now.
Do you reckon that mics would change things? Because players would be a bit self-conscious of the fact that they're going to be aired what they say.
I don't know if... Well, that's the thing. The broadcasters would just be constantly apologising, wouldn't they?
Wouldn't they, as well?
All you'd get is crowd noise, like, you know, like when they, you remember Big Brother? And it'd just be like birds tweeting. It's like, what the hell's that? Oh, someone swore, right, okay, fair enough. Yeah, but it's never going to change. I thought you were going to mention, actually, Jim, the Paolo Di Canio pushing. What's he called?
Paul Allcock.
Paul Allcock, okay, poor sod, pushed him over.
Which was hilarious at the time, but also, I mean, it's part of the game you don't want to see. I mean, Paul Allcock made the most of that Paolo Di Canio. If you are not of the age where you remember football in the 90s, then go and have a look at Paolo Di Canio pushing referee Paul Allcock over, because he kind of goes over with such theatrical style that he definitely needed a
Bambi
career.
On ice.
Yeah, it was
Louis Van Gaal style.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing.
It's like a baby donkey, like, getting up for the first time and using his legs for the first time, but in reverse.
Bambi on ice.
Yeah, 100%.
Right, well, I think that's a worthy get in the sea for today. And what are you going to wrap us up with then, Joel?
I was going to put a whole team in the sea. And I think you know what team I'm talking about.
Brighton.
But, just push them off the coast.
But I think Manchester United have been so far in the bin for so long that they're already at their incinerator now, so I can't really put them in there for too long. So I was going to go for a tweet that I saw, which was from a Liverpool fan, and it was the prospect of Liverpool potentially being level on goal difference with City and losing out on the title. Mm. And he was saying, oh, it's not fair how a team of these two abilities can end up being on the same points, but one team wins it just by a point or by. And everyone was literally commenting, saying, wouldn't it be amazing if we had a 38 game season where you can see who exactly is the better team during the whole season? But it had me thinking, actually, every other European league, they don't take into account goal difference, they take into account head to head. And I was thinking, I think this should be the next rule after away goal scrapping that should be scrapped, because let's say you have Liverpool and City and they're on 68 goal difference.
What's the rule that you want to scrap? The goal difference?
Yeah, I would have that second instead of, and then put head-to-head first.
Okay.
So for example, let's say City and Liverpool, they've been so closely contested all season. I would look at first the head-to-head as like an aggregate score.
But surely goal difference is a measure of how well the teams have performed.
Yeah, but then if
the
team wins 1-0 and a team wins 5-0, it's still a win, isn't it? It's similar to how they've changed in the Champions League now, where like if you get a 1-1 draw and a 2-2 draw, the team who scores the two away goals goes through. But it didn't make sense. Because
but if a team wins every game of the season 1-0 compared to a team winning every game of the season 3-0, surely the team that's won every
like
game 3-0.
Because that, whatever team wants to play the way they want to play, they play. I think it's every European league has done it correctly, I think. And then you can literally separate the two sides to see when they actually played each other, who was the better side.
So is that how other European leagues
yeah,
do it?
Every single European league does
everyone.
It that way.
Spain have done that for a while.
I didn't know that.
And Italy do it as well. So I don't know what the Milan two teams who are contesting for the Serie A now, they could potentially end up on the same points, same goal difference, but they'll go back to the two games rather than the goal difference. I think it's just way more fairer because City are a team score more.
If that happens, City and Liverpool have played twice this season and draw 2-2. So you'd end up having to have either go to goal difference anyway or have a playoff, which I'd love.
That would be amazing.
A one-game playoff for the Premier League title.
That can happen.
Is it if every single criteria is consistently matched?
Yeah, but it's not far away. So if for example, now the three games left, the pair of them, if City lose their next game 1-0 and Liverpool win their next game 2-0 and then they both match each other's scores, so the next two games, goal difference will be the same, points will be the same, and I think it will go to the first ever 39th game playoff.
Would they not take into account the amount of wins?
It goes to goals scored after that.
Okay.
And then apparently, so goal scored is very similar as well.
No, but can you imagine that game though?
Yeah.
The smallest, I don't think that would be a good idea. It'd be a good idea for the neutral, but imagine there's a tiny mistake. It's very conscientious, very borderline, could have gone either way, and that decides the whole thing.
The stakes are too high almost.
Yeah, I don't think a referee would want to even touch that game.
It's like the old relegation games that used to have, the relegation playoff games, which I think would be brilliant to see for a neutral.
I can't think
just
of
too high a stakes.
I can't think of a better game for Mike Dean to retire on.
Oh my, he would absolutely make that.
Mike
all
Dean
would
be first in that queue. I'm having this, lads.
Right.
Mainly because I want it and my ego is massive, but also the fact that I'm just walking away at the end of the season anyway. Imagine that.
It's a good shout though. I really like it, and I think if it does go down to goal difference this season, I don't think it will. I can't see City slipping up now, but if it does go down to goal difference, I can already see the petitions from Liverpool fans for some kind of campaign change. Right, that is it for Getting the C. They are the things we are complaining about over the weekend. A bit of a Monday moan. I hope everyone feels better about that. We're going to talk about transfers next, because unbelievably we are 1 month until the summer transfer window opens, and there's some pretty big names being linked with moves to and about the Premier League. We'll talk about them next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Sports Social, now on the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is Pedro from the Arsenal Opinion Podcast, and I am hyped about the title running. Can Arsenal pit Pep and Klopp? Will our young squad be described as mentality monsters? Is Mikel Arteta truly a generational saucy manager? Come and join us on the Arsenal Opinion Podcast to follow the boys on this historic 2024 Premier League title run-in and hear analysis of the games, the hottest transfer rumours, the Arsenal culture, and the business of football. 3 times a week exclusively on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Search the Arsenal Opinion now and come and join the fun.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. We're going to be talking transfers now. The transfer window opens June the 10th, which is 1 month and 1 day to go until players can start moving around their clubs again. And we're going to start with Arsenal, who their Argentine striker target, Lautaro Martinez. He's currently with Inter Milan. He's been linked with a few Premier League clubs over the past couple of seasons, but now Gazzetta dello Sport in Italy are claiming that Inter want to hang on to the 24-year-old Argentinian. He's been linked with a few Premier League clubs, as I've said, Marley, over the last couple of years. What do you know about him? Does he have the attributes that he needs to do well in the Premier League? Because we sometimes see strikers who have impressed in Italy, Romelu Lukaku, coming over to the Premier League and not really performing on the right level or the expected level.
Yeah, attribute-wise, I think he's got pretty much everything. He's quick, he's good dribbler, good on the ball. Similar kind of to maybe like an Aguero, as in, you know, he lacks a bit of physicality, but his movement is what sets him apart, I think. And he can score all types of goals, good with both feet. The only sort of thing I would question maybe, is the fact that Inter have played with two up front for a long time, and usually they've got a big man up front with him. It's either Dzeko, or this season or in the past it's been Lukaku. So in Arsenal, if they continue to play sort of 4-2-3-1, It would still suit him because Arsenal play with the ball on the floor. There's not too much long balls, you know, up to him. He doesn't have to do too much physically, and there's plenty of fluidity around him with Martinelli and Saka and Smith Rowe and Odegaard and all those options. So I can see it working for him if he goes. It's just a case of the fee and stuff, because I think Arsenal need two strikers, and to sort out Eddie Nketiah's future as well. So they need to sort that out and not just splooge the budget on one guy and then hope, because you know you're only ever one injury away from something happening. So it's a tough one for Arsenal, but they need to take that chance this season, because you know if they get in the Champions League, they need a striker.
Yeah.
If they don't get in the Champions League, they need a striker to get into it. So it's one of them where he's sort of the flavour of the month for about 2 years now, Martinez. So he seems to be the next one coming out of Serie A to have a go at the Premier League, and it'd be interesting to see if he did do well, because that would give another sort of angle to the whole why hasn't Lukaku done well thing, because Lukaku's came from the same club into the same league, and just something's gone wrong somewhere. And funnily enough, I think Inter could maybe afford the fee to bring Lukaku back if Arsenal buy Martinez. If Arsenal buy him for like 60 million,
yeah,
like Arsenal could, Chelsea could go, you know what, they've got 60 million now, so can we give him back?
Yeah, yeah.
That's actually a better thing for Arsenal, really, because it's a two-edged sword then. You get a striker and you get a decent striker out of the Premier League, because if Lukaku turns it on again for Chelsea, that separates Chelsea from Arsenal by another, you know, few points, well, 10 points a season maybe if Lukaku starts scoring 20-odd goals. So
it's a fairly big if, that, though, isn't it?
It is a big if. Like, he does look bored. He did score two at the weekend, didn't he? But
yeah, one of them a penalty.
Yeah. His second goal was good, though.
What about Nketiah, though, Joel? Because he's been the forgotten man at Arsenal for a long time now, after showing some really early promise. But this season, particularly at the latter end of the season, he seems to have found his form. He's scored 9 goals in the 10 starts he's had this season. That obviously doesn't include all his appearances as late substitutes and whatnot. But his contract is up in the summer. So what happens to him? And should Arsenal be looking to hold on to him now? Do they need a marquee striker if they've got a striker that's scoring 9 goals in 10 starts?
It's a difficult scenario for him, because I know that he'll want to start every single game, and he probably feels like he can. And judging from his form, he's looking like he's playing really well. He got those 2 goals at Stamford Bridge as well, which it was such a good performance. But then you need to look at Arsenal's perspective, which is he going to be the guy who can lead us to the next level in terms of getting 20 goals a season, maybe challenging for the top 3, because I don't see anybody breaching Liverpool and City for a long time. So you kind of have to look at it that way, and I just don't see him being that type of striker for them. I think they need to look higher, like Martinez, who could take them to another level, maybe Armando Broja, who I think is going to be really good for whoever he goes to next. It's hard for him, because he's at the right club right now, but then it's a question of who do you go to next, because he's not going to have a chance at any of the next top 6 clubs, really. So for him, if I was him, I'd probably stay, to be honest, because now he's proven his worth. Whereas prior to this massive run of form, everyone probably doubted his ability at the top level. But now that he's actually showing that he can do it on the biggest stage and against pretty big clubs as well at high-level games, he can do it. So if I was him, I would try and stake a claim in the side, because the only way down, the only next move for him is down. Yeah. And I don't really think he's going to want to take the step down. I think if he has the balls to try and make a claim at that level, he should stay and try and fight his way.
But he doesn't want to commit to another 4 years of sitting on the bench, does he?
Yeah, because he's no guarantees, though, is he? And with Arteta, we've seen as well that he's very flippant in terms of his choices. We've seen Lacazette's going to go this summer. We've seen Aubameyang go.
Well, Lacazette was in the team, wasn't he? Like 15 games in a row, and all of a sudden something happened and he went...
And then he's gone. It seems like the seniority doesn't like... I feel for him, the senior players, because he's semi... I don't know, how old is he? Like 40, Arteta? Something like that. Yeah. I feel as though it's a bit of an ego clash in terms of players who are a little bit senior. Maybe he doesn't like the challenge of having to have an older player try and dictate change.
I think it's maybe more an ego thing. Because if you look at Pep Guardiola, I mean, we always say that Mikel Arteta is Pep Junior.
And like apprentice style.
Yeah, Pep's never been a manager that's tolerated egos. And you look at the relationships he's had with people like Abramovich in the past. Not Abramovich, sorry.
Yeah, Abramovich was one with...
Yeah, Abramovich, yeah, I do mean Abramovich, yeah. Like in the past, it's
Yaya Toure as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He gets rid of them.
The senior
Joe Hart as well. Same thing, pretty much.
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah, so ended Joe Hart, didn't he?
Yeah, so it could well be that situation. You might be right there, Joel. Let's talk about a potential incoming at Man City. And given that lack of tolerance that Pep Guardiola has for egos, it seems crazy that Man City have been linked over the last 48 hours with a trip for Paul Pogba, who could be journeying around the M60 from Old Trafford to Man City. Now, you're a United fan. That would hurt, wouldn't it, if you saw Paul Pogba pulling on a City shirt and suddenly fulfilling his potential?
It would bring out the trauma of the Tevez one. That still hurts a little bit inside me somewhere. It gets triggered a little bit. David Ornstein from the BBC and from The Athletic has said that it's probably not going to be his choice this summer.
Right. Whose choice?
Pogba's choice. Apparently, it's not to do with loyalty. I think it's just to do with the fact that, well, he said that there's better packages, quotes, in terms of, I don't know what that means. I think we all know what that means in terms of the money-wise.
Signing on fee.
But you know what, though? In all honesty, I wouldn't even see Pogba getting into that midfield. Just for the fact that I feel like he's in the similar position to Kevin De Bruyne. Bernardo Silva is very different. I think Bernardo Silva will probably end up leaving City, but I don't really see him fitting into that City side that much. Mm. I think he would be a different player under Guardiola, where I think he would transform him massively. But I just think he's better suited elsewhere, to be honest. But if he did go to City, I mean, that would be a stinger, that, especially because the first time he left, he was on a free. The next time he left, he was on a free. But to the nearest neighbours, that would be... like, I think that would be one of the biggest transfers in Premier League history, to be honest. But again, it's come out this morning as well that it looks like Haaland's going to be the man who's going to be the big marquee signing for them. And I think that's the right signing for them. Yeah. It's kind of like last summer, how they went for Grealish instead of Kane. I feel like if they went for Pogba instead of a Haaland type, it would be kind of go counterproductive.
It's the player they've needed all season,
100%.
Isn't it?
But even still, I mean, did they really need him? Because they're completely coasting the league at the moment.
Well, I think if you look at the Real Madrid game,
Do you think it would have made a difference in that, though?
I think having a centre forward could have made a big difference in that game.
Yeah.
Because I feel like with Pep, when he doesn't play a routine out-and-out striker, his teams are a little bit more unpredictable then. I don't think teams know how to approach his side a little bit. Mm. And it's hard to know if Haaland will even adapt quite quickly, because I like to use the term of the Bundesliga tax, which for everyone who doesn't know, is the kind of, if you score 30 in the Bundesliga, in the Premier League, it's probably the equivalent of about 5 Premier League goals.
I kind of agree with you in terms of how, like, there's still big question marks over Haaland and the level he can play at. But
well,
I don't
Sancho struggled a bit. Yeah,
but I don't think there's been a player that has proved himself quite as much at the level Haaland has, because he hasn't just done it in the Bundesliga. He's done it in Champions League, where he scored multiple hat-tricks. He does it for Norway. And there he's playing for lesser teams in those competitions, arguably.
Don't get me wrong, he's quality. Like, he's a tier above probably the majority of the Bundesliga players who've come out of there.
It's not a slam dunk. But...
100%. It's still risky.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I could probably score a good 5 goals in that City side to create that amount of chances. So for a guy like him who's playing like a robot, don't get me wrong, he'd probably score a good amount. Because, I mean, Gabriel Jesus scores a good amount, and he's not the best technical player. But I still think it's not a sure fit in terms of success. I still think Kane's a pretty good fit for them, but they're probably looking at the age and thinking it's a better investment, isn't it?
Let's stick with Old Trafford for the time being and talk about Dean Henderson and his future. He stuck around at Manchester United over the last season, probably assuming he was going to get the number one spot from David De Gea, who was in poor form previously. But De Gea stepped up, Henderson's found himself on the bench, and he's going to feel like he's wasted the last year at Manchester United, I guess, Marley. But Bournemouth, newly promoted Bournemouth, are potentially interested in a move. Does it feel like a good move for all parties?
It could be, yeah. I think one thing everyone agrees on is Henderson needs to play.
Yeah.
Whether or not he can get I think he can get a better move than Bournemouth with respect to Bournemouth, but it's just who's out there, who wants him. Like I've said in the past, I would quite like Henderson at Newcastle with, you know, in terms of like Dubravka's 34, Henderson's 24, 25. So you're looking at that and thinking you could be our goalie for the next 9 years if everything goes well. And, you know, Newcastle's ambitions in the next 9 years are astronomical in terms of what team they're trying to build and stuff. Whether it'll happen or not, we don't know. But you know, the project is there and it's very, what do you call it, very attractive to players who want to come as well. And Henderson's a Northern lad. He's born in the same hospital that I was. So he's, you know, maybe he prefers to stay up north. Does he fancy Bournemouth? He's had a similar loan to Sheffield United where he got a lot of work, but ultimately they went down. I think even if Bournemouth stayed up next season, they'd be favourites to go down the season after. So it takes a lot to get them away from that. Eddie Howe did insane to keep them up for 5 years in a row before their sort of luck ran out. But you're sort of thinking, if it was Henderson, I would try and just see what else is out there first, because you kind of know what's going to happen with Bournemouth. You might get in the England squad, though, so that might be a thing for him in his head. Like, if I play every week of the season, I'm definitely one of the best three keepers in England, because there's Pickford and then there's Pope, and then the third one's kind of up in the air. So, you know, is it him? Is it Sam Johnston? Is it Ramsdale? He'll be looking at Ramsdale and thinking he's came from a similar level club to Henderson, like in terms of he's come out of Sheffield United, and then Ramsdale's come out of Sheffield United as well. Ramsdale, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and he's come out of Sheffield United, having replaced him and gone to Arsenal and just got games and is in the England squad. So he'll be looking at that and saying, well, he's no better than me. So I've got to get in. I've got to just play somewhere and get in. So, in short, I would try and hang on for something better. But if nothing better comes out, then at the end of the day, you've got to be playing football, haven't you? So, get your career back on track, because you have probably, unfortunately, wasted a year of your career. But you haven't just thrown it away, because he did have a genuine shot of being Man United number one, and everyone would take that chance if they could. But it didn't work out like that, and now it's time to move. Don't be a Jesse Lingard, basically. Don't hang on with broken promises of you're going to be first choice next year. Don't do that. Learn from that and go, okay, time to move on.
Like we say, there is just over a month and one day until the transfer window opens, and that is when everything starts to heat up, and we will keep you up to date with all the moves and potential moves on Football Social Daily. Make sure you've hit subscribe so you never miss an episode of this podcast, because there's one every single day of the Premier League season, and then over the summer there'll be three or so a week as well. Right, we're going to do a little quiz next, a little game. We're going to take a look at some of the slip-ups in the title races of previous years of Premier League and top division in English football. We'll talk about it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Right, last bit of today's Football Social Daily, finishing Monday's podcast with a bit of a quiz. Joel, Marley, are you ready for this?
As long as it's not one of those retro ones that you always like to do from the 80s and 90s when I wasn't even an embryo.
Not everything's about the Premier League, Joel. That's the problem. I mean, City have taken a step closer to the Premier League title. They are 3 points clear with three games to go. They were in a much better position earlier on in the season. It looked like they were going to cakewalk it to the Premier League title. So we're going to take a little look at some of the worst title collapses in English football history. Some of them
air of inevitability.
More recent than others. Some of them are quite tricky, these questions as well. But you never know. There might be a few grabs you can get. So we're going to start off with Aston Villa, who were in the reckoning for Premier League glory back in 1998. When, how old were you in 1998, Joel?
2 years old.
2 years old, so you should remember this nicely. So at Christmas Day 1998, Aston Villa were top of the table. It was just the season after they sold Dwight York to Manchester United, who then went on to win the title. Villa eventually finished sixth. Who was Aston Villa's top goal scorer in that season?
Dion Dublin.
Dion Dublin, says Marley, which is not correct. Oh. He scored 11 goals, was second in their scoring charts. Who might have been top goal scorer, Joel?
Have we heard of him?
Yep.
Right, I've got another guess, but go on.
I'm just going to go with... I actually don't even know who probably played for him. I'm not even going to lie.
Come on, Marley, who's your second guess?
I'm not going to put shame to myself.
Paul Merson.
Not Paul Merson. Julia Joshman.
Ah, damn it.
Top goal scorer. 14 goals for Aston Villa. No points for anyone next. It's more recent now, Joel. You'll be pleased with this. 2003-2004, Manchester United looked nailed on for the title until another team went on an unstoppable run and ended up winning the title by 12 points from Chelsea in second. United finished third. Who won the league that year and what was the special thing they achieved in doing so?
That is Arsenal, isn't it?
It is Arsenal.
The Invincibles.
Correct. Well done. Good grab. 1-0 to Joel. Next one. In 1971-72...
I love that you've saved it for Marley.
When Jim was 10.
Manchester United had a 5-point lead at the top of the Premier League. They went on to finish 8th that season. But which team and which iconic manager won the title that year?
Liverpool.
Liverpool is not right. Joel. Iconic manager in the 70s.
Is it Clough?
Oh, it is Brian Clough, Derby County. Well done, lad. Well done, lad. You did that well. Right. It's 2-0 to Joel. Marley, you've got some catching up to do.
He's
here.
He's playing like Newcastle here, Marley.
This could help you.
What
1995, 1996.
Oh, God.
Newcastle United had an unassailable lead at the top of the table.
Take it away, Marley.
Go separated them and their nearest rivals.
Hit me.
Their collapse and Manchester United's chase prompted that famous I would love it post-match interview from Kevin Keegan. But who had Newcastle just beaten when he gave that interview?
Oh, Christ. Who'd we just beaten?
Yep.
I thought you were going to say, where have they got to go? Because United had to go to Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Had we just beaten Middlesbrough?
No.
No.
Okay, I'll give you another guess, because it's a difficult question. If you get this wrong, then Joel's walked away. It's a shock win for Joel in the quiz.
Were we at home?
Yes.
Jesus.
Dirty
it was,
team.
It wasn't someone decent. Was it like Wimbledon or something?
It wasn't. Joel, any guesses?
Say like Millwall?
Leeds United. It was a 1-0 victory at Leeds United. Right, final question. You're playing for pride now, Marley. In 1996, Liverpool found themselves chasing the title and they topped the table on Christmas Day. Eventually, they finished third. Who was their manager?
When was this?
1996.
Acid Dalglish.
Is incorrect. Any guesses, Joel?
No, honestly, pre-96.
It was the fella before Houllier, wasn't it?
Roy Evans.
That's him.
Was the manager. Playing for pride, and you have no pride to take away with you. Joel, a 2-0 win in the quiz. Congratulations. Well done. It's the most biggest achievement of Manchester United over the course of the weekend is you winning that quiz. So well done.
You can have that. You needed it more than
you needed.
It's a home turf win in Manchester. I'll take it for once.
That is it for today's Football Social Daily. Make sure you join us tomorrow. We'll be looking ahead to the week of Premier League action. There's games this week, isn't there? I can't remember what fixtures there are, but there's fair.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
All over the shop. So if you want to catch up and keep in the loop of everything that's going on in the top flights, then make sure you've subscribed to Football Social Daily. We'll have a new podcast for you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.